Sports Sunday, hour two. We're going to 12:15 today. Steve Zabin with you. Metal Chris behind the glass. I got my man Tim Murray from Vegas coming up later on this hour. Good to have Kevin Sheehan weigh in last hour. Hope you're going to go out and do something nice today. Touch grass, as the kids say, if you're not already touching grass or being outdoors. I've lived in this area my whole life for the most part. A few forays out and about different parts of the country. And I don't know what it is. It seems like, and maybe this is just the old man in me coming out, it seems like that it's just slower and slower for it to get warm around these parts. I may be wrong about that. Today should be warm by the time we get to about noon, and that's going to be great. If you're indoors today watching college basketball, there are a lot of good bangers going on. And then once this weekend is done, we really start to pick up steam here as we head into April. Because of all the other sports that get layered in, the start of baseball, as well as the Masters coming up and the NBA and NHL playoffs coming up. So it's a great time of year to splash around in the big pool that is sports. I say that as a prelude because inevitably some people will go, gee, why are you being such a grump? I'm not being a grump. I just need to call balls and strikes as a professional commentator on the state of things when it comes to sports and sports media. Calling balls and strikes here, people. And that is simply this. We want the best, most knowledgeable, experienced people to do the job. And that's all we ask. It's not a huge ask. And yet, time and time again, it seems like network executives decide, yeah, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to give you something else. Something else you don't want and you didn't ask for. People online yesterday were properly crushing the Nate Burleson choice to be the fill-in for Ernie Johnson and also to be positioned as the possible successor to James Brown when he finally decides to retire. JB is in his 70s. He still seems to be vibrant and in mostly good health, and that's wonderful. There is a thought that after CBS does the Super Bowl in 2028, that's an off-ramp for JB. Who knows? Do it as long as you want to, as long as you feel good about it. I'm not pushing anyone out the door. James Brown, though, is an experienced and polished and professional broadcaster. Nate Burleson, they're trying to make into a thing. They're trying to say, hey, you know, ABC, they've got Michael Strahan. He's proven he can do this television thing. Let's try to get our own guy. I am not a Nate Burleson fan. Nate Burleson, as a ex-football player, does not work in that role. He is neither a basketball player nor a polished, experienced broadcaster. He's only been out of the NFL for a hot minute to begin with. And yet that's who they pushed out with the main CBS crew. Making it even worse is the fact that they have Barkley on that main CBS crew. And Barkley is sort of like the pumpkin spice of sports media. It's everywhere. It's in everything. Oh, you like that? How about pumpkin spice version? How about Barkley version? We'll do Barkley on this, Barkley on that. A splash of Barkley ought to do great. And I understand there is a certain amount of entertainment value with Charles. There is a, hey, he's not afraid to say it kind of value to Charles. But damn, I'm full. I've had enough. And Barkley not only doesn't know college basketball because he didn't watch it, he oftentimes brags about not watching the NBA. Yeah, that's what makes him charming. He just says it like it is. I don't care if he's watching the games and breaking down film. Okay. But Barkley doesn't belong on that set, just like Nate Burleson does. Doesn't. So we're now 0 for 2. Okay, I know what you also didn't ask for, America, and you definitely don't need. How about I give you a WNBA player, ex-WNBA player, you've never heard of? Renee Montgomery is her name. Now, it seems like a lovely woman. And seems to be having a lot of fun. And good for her, I guess. But again, why does anyone need, nor want, nor care about what she's adding to the games? You could go, well, she knows basketball, and that's all that matters. If she can explain the basketball she's watching and make it relatable to the viewer, then she's good for the broadcast. No. Nobody asked for this. Nobody wants this. At one point, she kept referring to Michigan State as Michigan.
Ooh.
That's an oof right there. And it wasn't that she had actually confused the two programs. She was making adequate points about Michigan State and the way they play and Izzo and everything else. However, she was shorthanding it into Michigan, and she did it multiple times.
You can't do MSU if you're going to do that. You can't.
Yes.
Yeah, you can't.
So at the end of her sort of two-minute little run of analysis, Barkley, and I guess this is cuts against my previous argument about Barkley, at least Barkley said it, he goes, hey, listen, you keep calling them Michigan, you're going to get a lot of angry fans showing up at the front door of our studio. And it was a funny point because he had to hammer home, and she laughed and said, oh, I know, I meant to say Michigan State. Come on, sis. You know better than that. This is Hatfield's and McCoy's level of hatred. This is big brother, little brother. This is War of the Roses. You cannot just casually say Michigan when it comes to Michigan State. Izzo is a guy that I used to really, really not like. I understood that he was a solid dude who did things ethically in the right way, but man, I had had enough of Izzo over the years, and I was not a fan. But the longer he stays in it and the longer I see him and exposed to him, the more I'm starting to like him. And that just shows that, thankfully, even in my old grumpy age, I can change my opinion, change my mind from time to time. Izzo was talking about the state of coaching and state of college basketball and all the NIL stuff and the portal stuff and why is he still doing it when many of his peers have said, that's it, I'm out. Tony Bennett, Jay Wright, Bruce Pearl. And he said, look, I believe that it's part of my responsibility to be a steward for the game. And I respected that. He also talked about how, hey, I coach kids hard. They know that coming in. So when you see me going off on a kid on the sideline, it's because, well, there's a reason. We've probably worked in practice over and over and over again. Listen, you are not switching screens on inbound plays with under 10 seconds left in the shot clock on our own back. But I thought I'd... No, we've been practicing that, and then you just did that, and they got a dunk out of it. Yes, I'm going to yell at you now because that's the last line of resort to get you to not do that. I must yell now. Anyone who's ever been a parent knows you don't want to go to yelling as the first choice, but it is always the last choice of things if it's needed. So anyway, my winding point is back to the desk, and I'm trying to think who is the fourth on that. It might be Seth Davis, whatever. Seth Davis is fine. He does cover the game. I don't care for his shtick, but whatever. Fine fella, whatever. Here's the thing. This is on the main desk of CBS. It's not hard. It's not hard to find better people, more qualified studio host who maybe people don't know, a college basketball guy that perhaps is not the star of Barkley's caliber. And then when it comes to somebody saying, hey, we should add a woman to the set. You know, it'd be nice for diversity and get a WNBA player in there. Somebody has to say no. To say, no, you know what? We don't need that. The listeners are not going to want that. You know, women have fought and earned their right to be on television and their place in the ecosystem over the years, to the point where they're fully integrated. We don't need to do this. I will say that the other studio crew, and I don't know if this is TNT, True, or TBS, they all blur together, But the alternate desk, which is Adam Lefko, who has really grown into the role as a host and was kind of an unknown until he got this gig, along with Bruce Pearl, who every time I watch him, I go, you know, he's nimble, he's articulate, he knows the game, knows the sport, knows the programs, he's got a good wit to him. God, if he just didn't make himself into such a total Todd, lobbying for his dipstick kid to get in the tournament, I would like him a lot better. I can't get out of my head. But Bruce Pearl is good. He's good on television. Then you got Jalen Rose, who's been around, was on ESPN for quite a long time at a pretty successful podcast. He understands broadcasting. He ain't my cup of tea, but he is at least knowledgeable in the college game. He's fine. And then we have, I think, one of the unique breakout stars television-wise of the tournament, which is Jamal Mashburn. Jamal Mashburn's great. I'm like, where's he been? What else does he do? I like this guy. Let me call up my own tweet here. I know it's very narcissistic, but I tweeted last night, Jamal Mashburn has been a nice surprise. Low-key, intelligent take energy, no BS, not trying too hard. I was stunned at the engagement that that tweet got. You know, we're all chasing clicks and likes and engagement. It was just sort of a throwaway line. I'm looking at it right now, 65 comments on this, and they are overwhelmingly in agreement. Here's one, Andrew. I noticed this too. Very rare to care at all about these studio guys saying anything, but he stood out as very good. Mashburn has been a nice surprise, nothing like the typical ex-NBA player who's on providing game analysis. Very true. That is excellent Cardinal Hayes High School for the boys in the Bronx education. Or that's his excellent Cardinal Hayes High School. I did not know that. And that must be from an alum right there. Another comment. Agreed. I keep thinking he'd make a great coach. The one criticism of Mashburn has been, yeah, but it looks like he just got off the couch. Put on a blazer at a minimum. Bar ain't that high. He was wearing a shirt that looked kind of like a tunic. I think it was probably a very expensive kind of buttonless.
You see what they put Cam Newton on TV with, though. Like, come on.
Right. Right. I don't think that what Jamal Mashburn was wearing was a cheap piece of clothing. I would be willing to wager it was expensive, it was designer, and you and I would blush at the cost of it, but it looked kind of Jetsons-ish. It looked weird. It was not a button-down collar shirt. It was not a didn't have a blazer, didn't have a tie. It was odd, but I don't care about that. I like the fact that they would come halftime, go through the highlights, talk about the games, and Mashburn just very calmly, low-key, was going, great point. Smooth. Effortless, not trying too hard. He didn't have a shtick. He wasn't tap dancing. Didn't have a top hat. Like, hey, look at me. Like, some of these guys are thinking, all right, this is my opportunity. I'm going to be the next Stephen A. Smith. I'm going to be the next Pat McAfee. No, you're not. Just talk about the games. Mashburn's been great. That whole crew, that four-man crew is great. And they're not on the A crew. Now, maybe it doesn't matter because the games are all distributed mostly equally. But I'm assuming by the time we get funneled down to just the last set of games that it's going to be the crew that nobody likes. And again, I just ask, why is getting the best, most knowledgeable and experienced people for the job sometimes so hard? We're not asking for a whole lot. All right, coming up, we got Tim Murray from VSiN joining us out in the desert. He has actually been throwing out winners left and right as if they're Mardi Gras beads. So we'll talk to him about the tournament. And then I got a thought on High Point. Even though they're out of the tournament, they are now on everyone's radar as the School of Social Conditioning and Steakhouses. That's next at Sports Sunday on The Fan. My algorithm is hooked into some High Point content at this point because I've been liking and retweeting some stuff. High Point Hoops tweeted, talked to a plugged-in High Point alum yesterday. She said within 24 hours of their win against Wisconsin, High Point had 19,000 requests for student tours. 19,000. Yes, indeed. These type of tournament runs and exposure are invaluable as marketing for schools looking to attract undergrads. Although I don't know if High Point is struggling at this point to get people to apply. I do remember, and I never considered it back in the day, back in the ancient days of 1986. In fact, I'm not even sure it was a university back then. But I remember, you know, as our kids were getting older, somebody said, hey, you know, have you seen High Point? High Point has a steakhouse on campus as part of their existing meal plan for students. And I'm like, a steakhouse? Really? I was as skeptical as Superintendent Chalmers having steamed hams in Principal Skinner's mom's apartment. Really, Skinner? Steam Aurora Borealis. Localized in your kitchen. A steakhouse on campus.
Can I see it?
No. Oh, I've never heard of steamed hams. What is that? It's an upstate New York thing. Yeah, I'm from Utica. Or no, I forget how it went.
But Albany.
Albany, yeah. No, it's more of a Utica thing. One of the great bits of all time. Anyway, so they got a steakhouse on campus, which High Point says it's because they want to, you know, help train and mold their young people into the experiences of life that'll help them along the way, and that they need to learn how to socialize and conduct a business meeting over a nice steak dinner. So why not build a steakhouse that's operational? And I would imagine, I don't know if they have a culinary major or department there, or restaurant services major there, or an entrepreneurial major there, but I would hope this would make sense to me. Not only do you let the students go to the steakhouse to get experience in how to clink their forks and knives while closing a big deal for Q4 of their business over a fine filet and a lobster tail, that you also have students then learning how to run a steakhouse, to cook the food, and to make sure the money sorts out in a way that it's profitable. But that is a far cry from what many of us who were lucky enough to go to college experienced in terms of which cafeterias had the, I don't want to say the better food, let's just say it had the least awful of the food choices to keep you fed as a college student. Also, High Point flew out to the game some 200 students all the way from North Carolina to Portland, Oregon, and there is a video they took of it. On this plane, all in their High Point gear. I mean, it looks like a nice charter plane, charter flight for free. My friend Aaron Torres, who does Fox Sports Radio, and he's really plugged in, really covers college basketball and college football like nobody's business. Aaron Torres says, I know I'm becoming grumpy old man when I immediately thought, wonder what the insurance liability is of sending 200 college kids on what is basically an all-expenses-paid cross-country trip. Yes, I know this makes me old and lame, but it was my first thought. High Point can really play, and they had Arkansas on the ropes yesterday. But you live by the three, die by the three. Old Jimmy Driveway, as I call him, Chase Johnston, nice kid. Good, strong faith behind him. It wears number 99 because of the Bible and the parable of the shepherd with the flock of sheep, and that he was more interested in saving the one sheep who had gone missing than he was about just keeping the existing 99 faithful sheep where they were. That's why he wears the number. He saved them with a late barrage of threes against Wisconsin. He cost them with some pretty bad forced missed threes down the stretch last night. And that's just sports. That's just the way it is. Then there's this, the Jamie Dixon interview with Tracy Wolfson when the fouls started going wildly against the Horned Frogs, against Duke, was pretty funny. Take a listen to this. All Dixon could do was laugh when Tracy brought up, hey, looks like they're getting the calls and you're not.
Now, Tracy caught up with the head coach of the Horned Frogs, Jamie Dixon.
Coach, 9 fouls already. How do you have to manage that down the stretch?
Can't say the numbers. He just said it. Yeah, obviously a challenge, but we got to fight through it, and we will.
What will be the message in the huddle here?
We're going to get a good shot right here. We got good defense down here. We'll go get a good shot.
Appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, there you go. He can't say anything because he'd get fined. Egregious, for sure. We'll see if the whistle carries on for Duke throughout the rest of the tournament. Quick break when we come back. Tim Murray from VSiN out in the desert. Get his thoughts on today's games. You're listening to Sports Sunday on The Fan. We're back. You're riding with Zabe here on a Sports Sunday on The Fan. Tim Murray is on the phone right now. He joins us from Vegas, host of VSiN Primetime, the Vegas Sports and Information Network. Brent Musburger's brilliant ahead of its time network for those who care about the point spread. My former update man on SB Nation. And the Big Ginger from Muhlenberg College, pride of Allentown, PA. Good morning, Mr. Murray. How are you? Word is, you're flinging out winners like Mardi Gras breeds right now. Good tournament so far for you?
Up and down. the gentleman that you speak of, that fortunately I was sending him the proper text messages.
He got
messages.
The good stuff.
He got the good stuff. He got the 1-800 good stuff. The rest of the people had to get just the scraps. Friday was rough. Thursday was good. Yesterday didn't really have that robust of a card. Today's make or break, Zabe, so we'll see how today plays out. But it's been a very I'm sure you've talked about it.
Favorites.
A lot of favorites have been winning. Yeah. So that's not ideal for your boy who likes to bet underdogs more often than not.
Well, favorites winning is one thing, but favorites have to cover, and there have been some meaty lines that have been last second back doors, and you're like, son of a bitch. Today though, I want to just quickly pop through the games and get a quick thought from you. I'm going to go chronologically through the day. Miami, Purdue, starting the day today at 12:10 Eastern time, Purdue -7.5.
Yeah, so there are some eights out there. I took eight with Miami here, but look, let's start with Purdue. Purdue really had a disappointing season. Preseason number one team, drops four of its last six, lost five games at home, which is just unheard of because of the home court advantage that they have at Mackey Arena. But then they go to Chicago, they turn things around, they beat Nebraska, UCLA, Michigan in succession, and then they start off the dance with a whooping of a 15 seed, which, you know, you could say, hey, that's no big deal, but it is. This is the team who lost to Fairleigh Dickinson. This is the team who lost to St. Peter's in the Sweet 16. You know, Miami is fascinating to me. Jai Lucas has done an amazing job in year one. Malachi Renew has really stepped up. He's their go-to guy coming in from Indiana. So I think this is a bit of a battle. Maybe I'm hopeful that we get some competitive games today, Zay, but I took eight here with Miami. I think this is a competitive game in St. Louis.
2:45, Iowa State, the 2-seed, a 5.5-point favorite over number 7-seeded Kentucky, who had a near-death scare against Santa Clara.
So the big concern here is the injury status of Joshua Jefferson, the All-American for Iowa State. I doubt he's going to play. He rolled his ankle in Iowa State's first-round win. He's probably going to be sidelined here. Iowa State is certainly more than capable of winning without their All-American, but you go over to KenPom, Zabe, Joshua Jefferson is, in his eyes, based off of his numbers, the second-best player in the country this year, only behind Cameron Boozer of Duke. So you're talking about, you know, an elite player that is out. Now, Taman Lipsey, their stud guard, is more than capable, as I mentioned, of taking this game over. They've got arguably the best three-point shooter in the country in Milan Mancilovic. Kentucky, I always wonder, you know, when you survive a game like they did against Santa Clara with the bank in three to force overtime and then they win. And if you had Santa Clara +3.5, like I did, you knew you were destined to lose that bet as soon as you went to overtime.
Yes.
You know, you wonder, Zabe, is this like a new lease on life? Maybe that's a bit corny. I don't know. But I think this, once again, I took the points here with Kentucky. You know, point spread's been kind of hanging around 4.5, 5 for the past day or two. So I want Iowa State to show it to me without their best player, more than likely. So I took the points here with Kentucky in this spot.
All right. Then the best one of the day in terms of, I think, pedigree and everything else.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe the second best. St. John's, Kansas at 5:15 this evening, as St. John's, the lower seed, is a 3.5-point favorite.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny, the discussion around St. John's, and the winner of this game obviously heads to your neck of the woods, will play Duke in the Sweet 16, yes. And that'll be a monster showdown. I believe that'll be on Friday. And that's, I mean, whoever wins this game, I'm sure CBS executives will be more than happy to have Duke versus the winner of right. this game. You know, you look at Kansas and their performance against Cal Baptist, and they don't get the cover, they get the win, and it really felt like they just kind of took their foot off the gas. They were up by 26 in the second half and then just let Cal come all the way, Cal Baptist, that has, come back, mm-hmm. and Cal Baptist has a really unique guard and Dominique Daniels. So they move on. And on the flip side, you got St. John's. And St. John's, I thought, was facing a team in Northern Iowa that was going to give them a battle, and they did not. St. John's came out. They were up 10-0 before a blink. I think it was 20-4. So, look, you look at the St. John's team, and it's very veteran-laden. It's got some massive size down low. Zubi Echefor, this is kind of a unique storyline to this game. He went to Kansas as a freshman, didn't get a ton of playing time. Now he's at St. John's. So there's certainly, I would imagine, a little extra motivation, if you will, for Zubi Echefor. Bryce Hopkins, the transfer from Providence, has been playing really well for St. John's this year. I've gone back and forth on this one. I actually think it's a little contrarian, believe it or not, to take Kansas here, even though they're led by a guy who could be in a Wizards uniform.
Kansas as the contrarian play. What a world.
Isn't that crazy?
Isn't that crazy?
I'll give you right now, DraftKings betting splits. It's not crazy overwhelming, but at VSiN.com, 58% of bets are on St. John's, which, once again, not massively overwhelming. For comparison's sake, Iowa State, Zabe, is getting 76% of the bets. So I've gone back and forth. I'll take Kansas plus the points. I'm not in love with the play, but I think the best player on the court is Darren Peterson. If he's fully locked in and engaged, I want to see, you know, I was texting with a couple of mutual friends last night about, you know, what we saw from Acuff last night, you know, in the Wizards maybe being able to scoop him up in the draft. And I was like, I want to see Peterson do what Acuff did last night. You know, I know the talent's there. I want to see it. I want to see that MF-er come out from Peterson. And maybe it will today, you know. So I'm going to maybe it's a little wishful thinking, but I'll take Kansas.
Okay, I got 5 games in 3 minutes, so we're going up tempo here. You ready? Here we go. 6-10 start, Tennessee at Virginia. The 6-seed Tennessee is 1.5 favored over Virginia.
Yeah, you look at this game, Zabe. This and Texas Tech, Alabama, the 2 games that are coin tosses just from a point spread standpoint. This is one of the few games I did not touch from a betting standpoint. Ryan Odom obviously has done a marvelous job. Nate Ament didn't do much in the first round. I think that might be a little bit of a concern there for the Wahoos, because this is a elite player, lottery pick, and he didn't really need to do much in Tennessee's easy dispatchal of Miami. So lean towards Tennessee. Jacoby Gillespie has been playing really well. The former Terp had a monster game against Miami. So no play for me, slight lean towards Tennessee.
Florida -10.5 against Iowa. Iowa is not Prairie View, but Florida just won by 117 points. So it looks like a juicy favorite play here.
Yeah, second largest win in NCAA tournament history, Florida over Prairie View A&M on Friday night. I played a little under here because I think the only chance, Zabe, for Iowa to compete in this game is to slow this thing down, and Iowa is one of the slowest teams in college basketball. So Ben McCollum is a coach that I really like. They are pretty much a one-man band, Bennett Sturts and nobody else. So I don't know if they have the horses to stay within that number. I played under here because I think that's what Iowa is going to have to do, try to grind this down as much as they can against Florida.
All right, 3 more quick. Arizona at 7:50 against Utah State. Arizona -11.5.
Yeah, I mean, Utah State's coach, Jared Calhoun, will be the head coach of Cincinnati by 9 a.m. tomorrow, probably. This is a really tricky matchup for Utah State. The size for Arizona is just too much. They've got elite guard play. Let's just start preparing for Arizona-Arkansas in the Sweet 16. That should be a blast.
All right, UCLA-UConn at 8:45. UConn minus 4.5.
The injury is a big concern here. Tyler Bilodeau of UCLA did not play in the first round. If he is back, I think UCLA has a chance to win this game. Two crazy coaches. I feel for the referees and Mick Cronin and Danny Hurley.
Oh, my God.
It's going to be a nightmare for those two guys. But I think I'll take UCLA here. They've shown the propensity of being a pesky dog. Love Donovan Dent. How about this, Zabe? UConn failing to cover against Furman snapped a streak of 14 straight covers for UConn in the NCAA tournament. Ooh. I'll say it's two straight non-covers. I'll take UCLA plus the points.
Every trend like that is ironclad until it doesn't happen, which it just didn't happen. And the last game of the night to close out, Texas Tech minus 1.5 against Alabama as the slightly lower seed.
Yeah, it's a battle of missing stars, right? Aiden Holloway with, we'll just call it, off-the-field issues. He will not be playing for Alabama. And then JT Toppin, Texas Tech's best player, has been out for about a month. Just a devastating blow to a team in Texas Tech that I thought could win the title if they were full strength. I'll lean towards the coach I trust more, and that would be Grant McCaslin at Texas Tech. This should be a great finish to the day. Two up-tempo teams, two of the best three-point shooting teams in the country. So Filon for Alabama, Christian Anderson for Texas Tech should both light it up from long range. Should be a ton of points. I'll say Texas Tech ekes this one out against Alabama late night tonight.
Tim Murray, VSiN Primetime, thank you for your time. I will see you out there in the desert Thursday or Friday for Zabe Vegas. Thank you, buddy.
All right, Zabe. See you, bud.
Coming up, it's just coaching. You'll live. That's next. A lot of good coaching sound that has come out in the last 24, 48 hours from college basketball. And let me reiterate my stance on many of these high-profile, big-time college coaches. They are sociopaths, all of them. They are a unique breed. But listen, it's a job somebody's got to do. The pressure's on them to win, the unreasonableness of the boosters and the fan bases, the money that goes to those who demonstrate how to win, the ability to both sell to an 18-year-old a vision of sunshine and rainbows about playing time and role on the team and now NIL money and how much they're going to get paid, while at the same time turning around and speaking to a whole different set of stakeholders in the university, the academic people, the boosters, the money people. It's a tough job. You have to be two-faced. You have to be a bit slimy. And they're all a bit slimy. But sometimes they say things that I go, you know what? You're absolutely right. Here's a couple of sound bites I want to play. This is John Calipari, who himself is a charismatic but slimy guy, talking about administrations win championships, but coaches win games. Or maybe let me rephrase that. Coaches win games, but administrations win championships.
If you want players to be empowered, they got to know that there's a commitment to the players. We have that at Arkansas, and you have that at High Point. They are committed, which is why you have a chance to win championships. If they're not committed, and now we got to be good stewards of what they give to us, and we got to make good choices. But if we don't have, we don't need to be a steward because we don't have enough to be the steward or with. Or you're not going to have enough guys to do something. And I said, and I bragged on High Point because they have a president that is about those students. That's everything they do is about those students. You know what? They're empowered. They're students. Flew them out in a plane. How many came on a private plane, chartered? I'm going to ask him, can he charter me somewhere? But again, I love to see it, and it proves my point. Administrations win championships. Coaches win games. In this era of NIL and all the other stuff, I'm telling you, if you're not totally into it and they're not committed, you're not winning now.
I love that point he makes, and it ties into what I was saying yesterday here, if you were with me on Sports Saturday, regarding the dunking on Kevin Willard at Villanova, losing, just falling apart in the final minutes and being bounced from the tournament. A lot of jilted lover energy from Maryland fans. And I said yesterday on the show, I go, you know, I'm not saying Willard's a good guy or that he's going to actually work out in the long run at Villanova. He's had one decent-ish year. And by Villanova standards, it was no year to write any books about, given that they are a pedigree program. But my point was, fans and media often take the default position and the default side of the administration. And my only point was, well, why don't you turn some heat on the University of Maryland's administration, because they're the ones who recruit the coaches, pay the salaries, sign the checks, and set up the ecosystem to be fully committed to basketball and fully committed to players. The best programs in the country are the ones that say, oh, we're doing basketball, and we're doing it first class, and we're going to push the envelope on spending because you now can spend to make yourself good. And we are going to embody that feeling of this is what we're doing every single day. Everything else, every single thing we're doing is to be great. That's the administration part of it, and that's what Calipari was hammering home. UCLA wants to be great again, like they once were, way back in the day under Wooden, like they almost were under my guy Ben Howland. And so they got Mick Cronin, who I would call him high-strung, but that's kind of insulting to people who are high-strung, because he's beyond high-strung. He is absolute lunatic. Somebody asked him about the whole, you know, narrative with him and Hurley, the two most insane coaches facing off today in the round of 32.
Over the years, it's no secret that you and Coach Hurley have kind of caught heat from the media about kind of sideline
demeanor.
What are
you talking about?
Sideline demeanor, working
have
officials.
Have you given me heat?
I haven't.
So that's why you're the only guy to pay attention to.
Okay. Well,
nobody else even comes.
National media.
Well, I mean, I respect you come to the game, so I respect you. You know, at least you're there. I mean, people that aren't there.
I know you don't care about it, but do you think it's fair that you have
it's ridiculous.
Gotten
everybody needs criticism. To get a life, bro.
Get a life, bro.
Come on, man. Get a life, bro. You want to win big, but you think Coach Hurley's not supposed to be intense, but you want to win. Come on, man. We're not coaching Little League, buddy. Everybody doesn't get an at-bat. You know, come on, man. Paying us a lot of money to win games. You know.
That said, you don't humiliate your own players in post-game pressers, which Cronin has done. You don't chase referees into the hallways after games when you lose, as Hurley has done. I think there is a line, and I do think these two guys have gone way over it at times. But the larger point I do kind of get. One last thing real quick. Metal Chris, have you seen the dude who's a Florida fan, the weightlifter dude, in the stands for Florida?
No, I didn't watch the Florida game.
Okay, so do me a favor. Google Florida bodybuilder basketball fan. It should come up. When you see this guy, you're going to be like, bah! Oh, my God. He isn't just ripped. He isn't just buff. Look at this guy. He isn't just that. He is
He's like those world's strongest man guys.
Unit. I mean, his arms are comically big and wide and thick, and his torso. Well, there is a photo I'm going to send you here, because while this guy is a freak of nature or a freak of nandrolone and some other banned substances, there's another freak on Florida's team. He is 7'9" Frenchman Oliver Rieu. He rarely plays, but he's 7'9". The two of them got together and took a photo, and I just sent you the picture. I'll tweet it out as well.
That's
freak
amazing.
Bodybuilder guy and 7'9" guy. God bless the two of them. We got one short little segment left on the other side. You're listening to Sports Sunday on The Fan. Got about 13 minutes top of this hour. I hesitate to get into any big sports topic because once we get it ramped up, it's like, see you later, goodbye. I do appreciate those who have tuned in this morning. Metal Chris behind the board today. I said to Chris just before I came on today, totally unrelated to sports, I'm like, holy crap, it's William Shatner's birthday. Do you know how old he is? And you said, oh, yeah, he's old as you know what. I go, he's 95. And he looks pretty good for 95. Picture of him on the beach smoking a cigar at 95.
Well, you got to figure that guy's had some work done.
Well, sure, he's had some work done on the exterior. But my God, I want to make it to 85.
Yeah, yeah.
Here looking you like, hell, I'll take 75, to be honest. Whatever. So there is that. We got a caller wants to talk about liquor laws. Is that right?
No. There's no caller.
Did I mishear you?
Yeah, I sent you something. It's on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Don't worry about
what
it.
What is it? No, let's get into it.
It's a post Fritz Hahn made about possibly changing some liquor laws in D.C., a proposed bill that could impact sporting events. The reason this is why it ties into sports is that, they say if they shut down a street near a sporting event, they may be able to serve basically.
Oh, right. Street parties, the likes of which were incredible. They specifically,
Fritz Hahn, who I don't know if he still does, but he at least used to write for Washington Post, one of their food writers and stuff. He goes to all the bars and does all the nightlife stuff for them, at least for years. I don't know if he still does because the Washington Post is kind of a mess now, but he did, for decades. But he's the one reporting this stuff, and I guess he mentioned in his post specifically they may do this at Half Street, so right by us here in front of Nats Park. So
interesting. Okay.
It's proposed now. And this is not something that's passed. So.
Yeah. And would you be in favor of it?
Yeah, sure. Like, I don't have a problem with that. Like, I love New Orleans. They got, like, no open container law and stuff. And just grab a beer and walk out of a bar. Why not? Like, I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, it works for Bourbon Street. And it works for New Orleans.
You got to do the no glass. Like, I get the no glass. Keep it in cups or whatever. Like, I get that stuff. So.
Right. All right, since we're just killing time here. Headline. Florida woman allegedly peed all over Airbnb rentals, then posted the videos on sex sites for money. Good God. I would give her the worst rating ever on Airbnb.
It's got to be a cleaning fee and stuff. Oh, my God.
What is wrong with people? Oh, my God. I'm torn on Airbnbs. I've never really properly rented one, but many have, and they say that they're the best thing going. You can get incredible bang for the buck. And then I've read the nightmare stories.
They're hit or miss. I'll put it that way. I've rented several, and sometimes they're great, and sometimes they are like you just would have rather been in a hotel. And a lot of it depends on the location and what kind of trip you're trying to do, too. So.
Right. Okay. So you just got to roll the dice sometimes, right?
Yeah, like some places don't have hotels in great locations to what you're trying to do, you know? So, like Bourbon Street, you know? Like, you can get the hotels in New Orleans, but they're not on Bourbon Street. You can get an Airbnb that is on Bourbon Street, you know?
Yeah. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I did that once for a friend's bachelor party.
How many days did you stay and sleep?
We were probably there like 5 days, like 5 nights, something like that. And this is, it wasn't during Mardi Gras or like Jazz Fest. It was kind of off season.
Five nights.
Yeah. It was great. I mean, I was literally like 3 doors off of Bourbon Street. Like, you walk out the door, take a left, and you were it was 15 feet from the middle of it. And, all the bars, and we had a place selling crawfish right there. So we were getting crawfish every morning for like, brunch. Like, just awesome. It was killer. Like, you can't get that experience.
Wow, that's too much crawfish right there. Yeah. I don't think I'd want 5 days of Bourbon Street. I'd want 2 nights would be my ideal number of nights. After that, I've got to get out.
Well, by the end of it, we were all just kind of like, we're getting too old for this. we're like,
Exactly. I know we're on radio. It's not a visual medium. So you're going to say, why are you playing the soundbite from something that's a visual thing, but I want you to find it, much like I want you to find the picture of the Florida weightlifting guy who's a big fan, who's going to go viral today during Florida's game against Iowa, or at least tonight at 7:10. There was a bike race over in Europe, and there was a helicopter shot. There was a turn in which some of the race participants were piling up in a crash. And there was also this 10 to 15 foot kind of stone wall embankment that had a guardrail on it, but a couple of the bikers spilled over the top of the guardrail. Nobody died. Nobody was seriously injured, but they were definitely banged up. And the funniest part is listening to the French announcers go crazy with the phrase, l'image terrible, which would be, what a terrible sight. L'image terrible!
L'image terrible, elle est passée par-dessus le parapet!
C'est pas possible.
Oh non!
Oh non! I mean, this biker, absolutely over the edge. Here, I'm going to send you this one because you'll enjoy seeing it there, Metal Chris. I mean, again, he's okay, but he's going to be sore for a while. Even my dropped out of French in 11th grade knows the attention, meaning look at this, alors, which is, oh my God.
Oh, peuple, sur accident! Attention! Oh, non! L'image terrible, elle est passée par-dessus le parapet! Oh, non!
Oh, non! Oh, no! He has flown over the thing! Oh, boy!
He's just laying there on the ground, too, though. Like, he ain't trying to get up. That's, ooh.
Babylon Bee headline, wife doesn't like tone of husband's okay text reply. Listen, that can go both ways. There are times in which I get the simple okay, and I start crying. Is that okay, or is it okay? Big difference there. So can't read too much into text messages sometimes. There incident, very scary incident. Am I not breaking up anymore? Sorry about this. I've got connection issues right now. Just let me know how I'm sounding right now.
But you're just dropping out for a second here and there.
Okay, it should be picking up here.
Stop streaming high definition video while you're doing the show, okay?
Thank you. Good point. There was a very scary incident that thankfully did not turn totally tragic at the PGA Tour event down at Copperhead Resort, Innisbrook, Florida, as a little girl got hit by a golf cart and ended up getting pinned underneath it. Play was briefly halted as Brooks Koepka was nearby, tried to comfort the girl. They did rescue her. She was okay, but obviously traumatized by it. I mean, that is nightmare stuff right there. These golf carts that have to get around to administer golf tournaments, the TV production carts, and sometimes the food and beverage services cart, they got to be very careful looking at, okay, where are we going? What are we doing? Is everyone done with Oz the Mentalist? I agree that his tricks are amazing. You don't know how he does them. You don't know what he is. Is he truly a mentalist? Can he really read minds? I think it's a little bit of both. He's obviously got a knack for it. Here's the question, though. Have you seen enough of him? Because he's being inserted now everywhere. Awful announcing as a story. It says, sports media, it's time to retire Oz the Mentalist. And actually, I think it's called Oz the Mentalist, not Oz. But yeah. You wear Luka Doncic's ugly, not alimony, but child support situation, which I guess would be part of his alimony. Luka Doncic, his ex, is filing for child support and filing for it in California, despite living in, Slovenia. That's where she and the child live, but she's filing for child support in California, which Luka claims is an attempt to secure a bigger payout, this per TMZ. Luka is asking the court to dismiss the case, arguing neither he nor the children live in California and that the matter should be handled in Slovenia, where he already filed the necessary legal paperwork. But, you know, when it gets to this point, the woman's going to file for as much money as she can possibly get. Apparently, the two have known each other since they were 12, so they go way back. Man, they somehow got sideways in a way that, hate to see it. Couple other things real quick here. Matt Painter has talked about the scheduling issue when it comes to mid-majors. Both the coach at Miami of Ohio and the High Point coach were pretty chesty after their early round wins, talking about, nobody wants to play us. Well, Painter was pretty brutal going, yeah, no, we've played mid-majors. We played the good mid-majors. Miami of Ohio has been a bad program for a while. They've played Akron, who's been the class of the league. They played Kent State. They played Toledo. They played Oakland. They've played Colgate. Here's a dose of Matt Painter.
Because if he was in my position, like, you're going to play 11 non-conference games next year, it's going to go to 12. And so we play six high-major games, and we play five mid-major teams. So when they say they don't play mid-majors, like, we played five mid-majors this year. But if he was in our position, he'd do the same thing we're doing. Like, I didn't set the net rankings. The net rankings set themselves. But I'm going to go buy it. Like, I'm going to figure it out. The coaches that don't look at the net rankings and get things figured out how to schedule are bozos.
Wow, Matt Painter bringing the heat on that. So, yeah. Pour one out for the career of Milk Chamberlain. Avila, forget his first name, for St. Louis, a.k.a. Steph Blurry.
The Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Larry Nerd, a.k.a. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. His college career has finally come to an end as St. Louis was rudely extinguished by a Michigan team that was running on all cylinders. I believe his first name is Robbie. But, yeah, this kid is everything about March Madness. Somebody that you just want to root for. Also, somebody somehow mashed up Shane Gillis with his last name. And I'm like, that is perfect because he looks Shane Gillis-esque. Don't know what he's going to do from here. I doubt he's a pro player, maybe in Europe, but you were fun to watch there, Steph Blurry. Godspeed the rest of your life. All right, that's it for me. What a fun run this was. A little 2-hour and 13-minute romp through the world of sports where we get to celebrate and enjoy things for what they are. Thank you, Metal Chris. Caps Hockey is next. We will see you next time on The Fan.